Miss some Cap and Company? Your podcast is ready. Chicago's home for sports is on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
This is Cap and Company on ESPN 1000.
It's 10 o'clock in Chicago. We're in the First Midwest Bank studio, and they are doing yeoman work to help everyone through this really tough time we're all in. First Midwest Bank is the great sponsor of our studio. 312-332-3776. So today is Jordan Cornett's birthday. He and his wife, Shay, now live in Connecticut. Jordan works on the ACC network owned by ESPN. And I FaceTimed with him this morning, talked to him all the time, and Danny had booked him to come on so we could wish him a happy birthday and talk some sports. Jordan, happy birthday, my man.
Thanks, my friend. You know, everybody always says time flies. Well, not quite right now. I feel like it's moving at a snail's pace. But I'm happy to be healthy, abiding by the guidelines set by our world leaders, and enjoying some time with my wife, who's actually asleep right now. And I got some peace and quiet in the house, but it's good to catch up with you, my friend.
You too. So we're having this discussion, which of the three-peats for the Chicago Bulls in the 90s did you enjoy more?
Well, that's a great question. Which one did you go with?
It's the second three, because it became like the Beatles. It was Rodman and Pippen and Jordan. It was like insane.
Okay, so I was wondering if you were going with an actual year, like were you asking if it was 91 or what? In terms of the actual three-peats of the series, part one of the three-peat or part two of it, definitely part two, because you got Rodman in the mix.
Yes.
And I think when you throw that personality in there, and I think what will be fun for people to come to realize with this documentary, if they missed it with Rodman and his 30 for 30, is Rodman was as big a name in the United States as Michael Jordan for a moment in time. Not saying he was Michael Jordan globally. I mean, you could even argue Rodman was there for a segment of that time because of his pop culture impact. Rodman was as at top of that line as MJ for a share, but then obviously you got Pip, you got Harper, you got the rest of the crew. But I just think adding Dennis Rodman in, that's a whole new dynamic that really took that thing to another level.
So having covered it and having gone to multiple championships, I remember when they won at home. Chris, which championships did they clinch in Chicago? Seattle and Portland, is that right? They clinched Phoenix on the road. They clinched the Lakers on the road.
They definitely clinched Phoenix on the road in what, five?
Maybe that first Utah one was here.
Yeah, maybe the all I know is that one of them I had to leave after the game ended for, I probably was there for 30, 40 minutes, and then I had to leave to go to the studio, and this guy walks up to me and says, hey, man, can you drop me off right by your studios at WGN? It was the late Gene Siskel.
And wow.
Gene Siskel and I are driving. People are starting to get crazy out on the streets because the Bulls just won the title. I'll never forget it. And then another time they win a title, I'm in the locker room, and I have two cell phones. And the late Tim Weigel, his cell phone dies. He gets into a fight, literally screaming at another reporter who got in his space. And he's like bitching about his cell phone. And I said, Tim, take a deep breath. Relax. You can take my second phone. Just give it back to me. He's like, oh, my God. And yeah, I mean, there are some crazy stories, man, that I remember. The second three, though, being around Dennis and Michael and Scotty and Phil and looking at that going, this is insane. It'll never be like this again. That's what I remember most.
Well, yeah, and I got to think, you know, I was one of the unlucky ones who got to Chicago post that Bulls run in that era. And, you know, working in the medium, I always looked around at you guys like you and Lou Canellis and Marcin Greco, Tommy, Sylvie, and think about, you know, what a crash course in journalism and sports media for you guys, because you were the epicenter of the sports world during that time. So the lessons that you must have learned, the knowledge you must have gained, I mean, obviously you had a background and a base before that, but the stuff you must have seen and the moments, it's just stuff that we all dream of working in this business. And I haven't quite been around a franchise or organization humming like that in my life. And I hope that comes around for one of my teams at some point, but wow.
So you and I were having this debate over the weekend, and look, what LeBron has done, you know, nutrition is so different today. Training methods, sure, so different today. He spends, I read the article when you were still working with me here, $1.5 million a year on personnel, equipment, cryo machine, all this other stuff to take care of his body. He hired a Navy SEAL who puts him through his pregame workout, and he said, that's the first time I ever really thought about my core, and it took all the strain off his back, and all of a sudden he plays all 82 games. They win a title, the whole deal. But the amazing thing is that we look back at that time and how physical the game was.
Yeah, no question. And me and you got into a debate, and look, I know I've said before, you know, you got to consider LeBron in the conversation, and I stand by that. I still do believe Michael is the best of all time, and that was something that I needed to see more play out with LeBron and his trajectory. MJ's done stuff that LeBron could never do, but LeBron's done stuff that MJ may not be able to do. He's never been in a scenario to do it, so I'm put in that situation. But what we have seen is this is our version of greatness in this generation, and that generation precedes me because I was part of the MJ generation. But what you're seeing LeBron do, it's incredible. I mean, this is a guy, when you look at what he's done in the finals and you look at his record compared to the pristine record of MJ, some of these teams that LeBron got to the finals had no business being there, those Cleveland Cavaliers teams. That speaks to his greatness, the longevity, the ability for his body to stand up. And I know you talk about the modern medicine and the training. MJ had that year to reset with baseball. And people can say what they want. He's still on buses. He was traveling. It's a different kind of grind on your body. And for MJ to remove himself for that season, come back fully charged to go, that is a separator between him and LeBron. LeBron has came and done it every single season. Now, I'm just letting you all know, I'm still Team MJ first. But there's still stuff to be celebrated from what LeBron's doing. And I think we get to the point when you start comparing the two, it's simply unfair. Much like when Kobe passed, we looked at Kobe, tried to compare him to MJ, and didn't fully appreciate Kobe until he's gone. Look back and say, wow, what a career that was. And I just wish in real time we could do that with LeBron, just appreciate him for who he is.
So as you look at the way the game is played today, what does a Jordan Cornette who played high-level Division I basketball, was a top 50 recruit in the country, and maybe you didn't play in the NBA, but you played at Notre Dame, and that's big-time basketball. How do you think Michael would do today and Steph Curry would do if he played 86 to 92 right in the throes of the physicality?
Oh, I think Steph would have battled a little bit more injury. I think the way Steph attacked the closeout would be a little bit different with his approach, but yet still he'd be one of the greatest players in that NBA era. No question about it. When you can shoot from across the half court and you got to check somebody, it makes you incredibly dangerous. There's a couple sharpshooters you can look at in that time that were dominant. I mean, people talk about a guy like, I mean, look at Mark Price, who was shorter, who wasn't as athletic, didn't have as quick of a first step, was the guy who carried some of those Cleveland Cavaliers teams. It was a physical league. I'm just throwing a name out there of a guy that was a sharpshooter first but could put it on the deck, like a Steph. Steph was stronger. Steph has got more size. Steph is a better player. So if Mark Price was able to have a very good career, imagine what Steph would have done in that type of era. So there's no question about it. What would be interesting about MJ now, he'd still be the best player in the NBA, but what you see with MJ is an even further focus and determination and discipline to expand his range. Because what MJ did at every turn was say, oh, this is what the league is? Let me adjust and let me be elite there. Let me hone in on a jump shot. Let me extend an accurate three-point shooter. Let me develop a post game. I'll continue to be the best defender in the league. So when he looks at guys like Dame Lillard in this league, Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, he goes, oh, they're shooting it that far? I'll become the best shooter from that kind of range. It just wasn't required of MJ back then, but he would have made those necessary adjustments in today's league.
let's talk college. Who do you think, you saw a lot of games. I called a bunch. I watched a bunch more. Who do you think would have been the NCAA champion?
Oh, man, what a crazy question. And this is what absolutely sucks about the world we're living in, is all hypotheticals right now, mm-hmm. with when leagues are going to come back, with who would have done what. I hate it just as much as you do, Pat. It's a legitimate question, though. Look, it's madness. It's crazy. But I really fell in love with that Florida State team. I mean, they played 97 guys. Like, they just threw different bodies out there and a bunch of guys who could score at least 8 points or more. Guys would have been stars on any team he threw them on. So I really like that team. Leonard Hamilton is one of the best personalities, X and O's guys and recruiters, built that program to another level. I really think it might have been their year. What I was most curious to see, though, is these mid-majors. Dang, I would have liked to see what Dayton could have done this year. Would have loved to see what San Diego State could have done with Brian Dutcher finally taking the reins from Steve Fisher in his second season. It would have been so exciting to see if those mid-majors were for real this year. Then another team that everyone knocked off and wasn't thinking about because how ugly they played this year was Virginia. I mean, the ability for Virginia to win 8 in a row down the stretch, could they have defended their title? So many questions we'll be left with and wondering, but I'm glad the NCAA made the right decision and took away the eligibility for the winter athletes. That should have even been on the table. With the losses that are going on in the world right now and the losses the NCAA is going to take, these young men and women had an opportunity for the majority of the season to play it through. Spring sports deserve that extra year of eligibility. It'd be interesting to see how these universities and schools handle aid, but it should be off the table for winter athletes. So I think they got that one right.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I still believe Kansas was the best team in the country. I do.
Man, you and Danny are really getting along right now, huh?
Yeah, we are.
That's amazing. All we see eye to eye on, Jordan.
You know, I love Bill Self. It'll be really interesting to see if he's the guy there moving forward. I know everybody had the gossip about him to Chicago potentially, but I think there's real legs to him in this Spurs story, no matter how much he wants to downplay it.
The interesting thing about that Kansas team, first of all, I'm a huge Bill Self guy, as you said. Azubuike is a hell of a player. Just watching them, I watched them when they played at Oklahoma State, and the gym was, you know, they're all ready for Kansas, man. And they hit some shots early, and Kansas took every punch and went, yeah, okay, get off of me. And boom, put the accelerator down and see you later. I just thought in the end they had the combination of inside, outside that nobody else could have dealt with. I watched Dayton. Obi Toppin's a great player. They're well coached. They're really good. I just don't think they could have matched up physically in the end.
Yeah, it would have been interesting because people downplay their point guard Jalen Crusher for Dayton too, who is a high-level college player. Will he be a pro? Who knows? But it wasn't just the Obi Toppin show. I know you do a lot of A-10, so you had more eyes on him closely. So I respect your opinion on that and absolutely on Kansas. I mean, that inside-outside combination, Cap, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, the ability to get the buckets from the outside with Devon Dotson, and oh, by the way, a guy who recommitted to his body to get into shape where he didn't have to play 15 to 18 minutes a game, but 25 to 35 minutes a game, and Udoka Azubuike really separated them. You had the opportunity to generate baskets from the perimeter and on the inside at will. There was no better inside-out combination in college basketball this season.
Hey, before I let you go, what's it like having a brand-new dog? You have your wife back. You're in a new house. What's it like?
You know what, man? It's fantastic. A lot of the listeners know the life that we were living for a few months there, me being part-time in part-time housing, living in Hartford, Connecticut, while my wife was finishing up at Fox. I mean, we were like ships passing in the night, newlyweds who weren't spending much time, and now we're settled in Fairfield, Connecticut, a brand-new house, got our little puppy aptly named Kobe, and we're spending every single minute together. So I know a lot of people want to pull their hairs out being around their significant others, but we're catching up on lost time and having the time of our lives, man.
Hey, man, we miss you. We love you. Happy birthday. Make sure Shay takes really good care of you today.
Yeah, you would think I'd get just today, right? She's the one napping. I should be sleeping. What's going on here?
That's it. Let her sleep. Enjoy the peace and quiet.
Yeah, absolutely. I love you guys, man.
We love you. We miss you. There you go. That's our guy, Jordan Cornette. He was my partner here for a while. I also worked with his awesome wife, Shay Pepler, and now they live out in Connecticut. They're happy, healthy, and safe. And got a brand-new dog named Kobe. 312-332-3776. More of your calls and Todd McShay on who he thinks the Chicago Bears should draft in the second round. They've got picks 43 and 50. We'll get to that next.
It's Cap and Company. Follow us on the gram at Cap and Co. and ESPN _ Chicago.
ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
So we have got a great contest going on. Phenomenal contest.
You,
I'm kind of a big deal,
are connected.
It's not about who you know.
You know people.
Who would you say is the most famous person in your phone?
You know people who are known. Can you get them to call us?
I enjoy American football. I've actually dated a player once, but he wasn't my type, so I set him up with my friend Giselle.
ESPN 1000's biggest name drop. The bigger the name.
I'd say we're dropping names three at a time.
The bigger the prize. Which celebrity can you get to call us?
So get the biggest celebrity to call us on this show, Carmen Yerk, Waddle Sylvie. With the help of our great listeners, get the biggest celebrity. We keep a running list on Friday afternoon, April 3rd. Our boss, Mike Thomas, will determine who the biggest celebrity is. Make sure it's not an impersonator. That celebrity must tweet. They are jumping on at ESPN 1000 in Chicago from their verified account. If you get the winner, you win a $500 gift card to Meats by Lins. They have amazing steaks. They service most of the best restaurants in Chicago. But with a lot of restaurants shut down, they are now selling to the general public. Visit eatangus.com. I'm telling you, it's the best steaks you'll eat. At eatangus.com, they have a number of high-quality protein packs to choose from. Steaks, pork, ground beef, you name it. And a chance to win a bunch of money because they're going to give you a $250 online gift card to Club Hawthorne from Hawthorne Racecourse, Chicago's hometown track. You can bet the ponies from your home on your computer, your phone, your tablet at clubhawthorne.com. You could turn that $250 with a good pick from Eddie Olczyk maybe into a ton of money. You never know. So there you go. Yesterday, Jim Peterick, at the urging of his friend, called our show, Jim Peterick from Survivor and the Ides of March, and I asked him, hey, Jim, what's your favorite song you've ever done?
I'm a friendly stranger in the back of the van, and would you have inside my car? I got Dick, Kenny, I'm a lovable man. Hey, you're the nearest stop. I'm your vehicle, baby. Take it anywhere you want to go. I'm your vehicle.
That was so awesome. That was just so spectacular when he was on yesterday. So that's the contest, and hope things will work out for you to get the best celebrity to call in, and hopefully it happens on this show, because I loved Danny tweeting last night after day one. Cap and Company has the lead. I loved it.
Listen, listen, I'll be honest. There's nothing we do on this show ever that impresses my wife. I always joke that I could tell her that I was an accountant and she really wouldn't know the difference because she doesn't know what we do between 9 and noon. But yesterday at dinner, I played that for her. She knows the song. She was incredibly impressed. She had a huge smile on her face, so I felt like I won the day.
There you go. It was awesome. To see, like, Danny's intense when he's locked in, and to see his smile when Jim Peterick started playing. Danny was at his console. Danny, that might be the biggest grin I've ever seen you have.
That was really cool. Like, we did not expect him to sing. He was a nice guy. He was talking to you. He was chatting. You asked the question, and all of a sudden, he had a guitar in hand, and he starts singing a hit that everybody knows.
Yeah.
Whether you're an Ides of March fan or not, whether you were into that music, you knew that song, Vehicle. I mean, it was number two on the Billboard charts in America.
Right.
I Googled it last night. It was Warner Brothers' biggest selling hit ever at that time. And he's singing it on our show just out of nowhere impromptu. It was great.
That was
absolutely outstanding.
Yeah. Sorry. That The movie Rudy was fun, but it crushes
Rudy. Unless he gave some kind of speech, Rudy, not to poo-poo him, he's great. Everybody loves Rudy. But unless he gave the speech from the movie on Waddle and Sylvie show, right, you don't beat an impromptu singing of a great song.
Correct. Well said. Take that, Abdallah. 312-332-3776. So the boys printed out the Todd McShay mock draft. Hold on, I need my reading glasses.
This mock draft is different than his first one because he goes into the second round. That's why it's appealing to Bears fans, because we obviously don't have a first-round pick because we got Khalil Mack out of that deal.
So in the first round, I'm not going to go through the whole first round, but he does have Joe Burrow still going number one. There had been some talk that perhaps the Bengals would surprise everyone and take Tua Tagovailoa, but looks like Joe Burrow goes one to the Bengals.
McShay was on with SVP last night, and he said, had it not been for the Tua injury, without a doubt, Tua would be slated to be the number one overall pick. Just obviously because of the injury, you can't do it.
Yeah, but if your doctors tell you that Tua is 100% healthy, then don't you just evaluate who's the better player?
No, you can't do it. Too many injuries. Listen, we've seen it 20 miles north at Hallis Hall here. You mess up that quarterback pick. Like, let's say that the Bengals decide, all right, Tua's the guy, we're going to take him and leave Joe Burrow on the board. Just like the Bears took Mitch Trubisky and left Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson on the board. And you're wrong. You destroy your franchise for way too long. I think the injury causes too much concern that you have to take the sure thing, and that's Joe Burrow.
Okay.
But apply that exact logic to the Ryan Pace situation of drafting Mitchell Trubisky over Deshaun Watson. What was the knock on Deshaun Watson?
The same
injury concerns.
Correct.
And he was the better player.
And they were not the only team that had him. Matt Nagy told the people in Kansas City at the time, I wouldn't draft him because I'm concerned of his injury.
I don't care who said it. Well, the point is, like Tua Tagovailoa, Deshaun Watson had injury concerns. So, Danny, I disagree with your premise. I feel like if the medicals check out and you're comfortable with where he's at right now, you're drafting a quarterback not for tomorrow. You're drafting a quarterback for 5 years from now, 10 years from now. You're hoping to get the best possible player. So if you look at it that way, if Tua Tagovailoa at the end of the day is going to be the next Drew Brees, that's the guy you take, even if you can't use him next year. That's the player. Deshaun Watson was the player. You passed on Deshaun Watson because of the injury concerns. Today's medicals are completely different than what they were 15, 20 years ago, right?
Correct.
So like rehab, prevention of injury, all this stuff is different. And as we go farther into the future, it will be improved. So you have to trust your infrastructure with your organization that you could get a player in there, keep them healthy, keep them prepared, keep them playing on the football field. And quarterbacks play now until their mid-40s. Because of the rules that we see, and wouldn't you rather have the more talented, skilled player going forward? And think about it. In today's NFL, you can barely touch a quarterback.
Yeah, I don't know if they play into their mid-40s.
Okay, we could give you a handful of quarterbacks playing in their 40s, can't we?
We can give you Tom Brady.
Okay, Rivers.
Drew Brees. Rivers is 39. Mid-40s is a big difference.
He will be playing in his 40s, no?
Yeah, I mean,
Ben Roethlisberger will probably get there.
You're
telling me that Aaron Rodgers won't? Russell Wilson won't?
Maybe.
Come on, that's the way this is going. So if you want to argue semantics, sure, you can argue semantics. The point is, quarterbacks are playing longer than we ever expected.
Okay,
and so you look at Tua, you're not looking at Tua for the next 5 years. You're looking at Tua for the next 15 years.
Here's the difference between the Deshaun Watson, because I agree with what Chris is saying as far as the Deshaun Watson injury. Deshaun Watson's injury was a knee. That is commonplace in sports. Guys come back from knee injuries all the time, rehab.
But that was his second.
Get back. Yes, but they can come back from that. That's much more common. It's like, I'm not comparing it to Tommy John, but when you hear pitchers having Tommy John, it's not the end of the world. They have it, they come back, and they're fine. What Tua had was he had a dislocated and fractured hip. Like, that's something that players don't come back from as often. That's not a common injury,
right?
Like a knee.
Right.
I won't disagree with that.
Now, when we had Theo on at spring training, Danny, I asked him this question, see if you remember the answer. I said, Theo, analytics, if we go back in the 90s, teams that were doing analytics had a significant advantage because most of the industry wasn't. And now everybody's got an analytic department. What's the next great frontier? And what did he say? Medical science. knowing which guys are have a more of a likelihood to get injured, and then having better processes to get guys healthier and to keep them healthier. That's the next great frontier that teams are spending tens of millions of dollars on.
What do you guys think about the way the New Orleans Pelicans have handled Zion Williamson in his rookie year?
I think it's
they've been very cautious,
very
right?
Brilliant.
And they seem to be using all the resources and knowledge that they have through their medical staff to try and give him the best possible chance at staying healthy as he goes into his career. I get the feeling that whoever drafts Tua Tagovailoa will take that same approach with a quarterback, as I think many NFL teams would. But I feel like, as Theo told you, Cap, I think teams are now looking at it as this isn't just a pick for today. This is a pick for the next decade, and we need to find a way to best maximize ability for these athletes to stay on the court or field.
What if your favorite team was in the midst of a rebuild, and we'll get to the McShay picks in a minute. What if your favorite team, Chris, was picking near the top of the draft? They're in a rebuild. It's Jacksonville, whoever it is, Cincinnati, whoever it is, and you determine Tua's the best player. Would you sign a veteran quarterback or keep the veteran you have and not have Tua start right away because he'd be less than a year from a hip injury? We'll discuss that and go through McShay's picks. What does he have the Bears doing? Who else is going in that top 10? We'll be right back.
This is ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
This is Cap and Company, sports talk while you're on the clock.
So, Todd McShay did his mock draft. This is his latest mock draft. So he had Joe Burrow going number one to the Bengals. Number two, the Redskins, while he said, I expect Washington to at least listen to some trade offers, but at the end of the day, it'd be really tough for the Redskins to pass on the most talented player in this class and one of the best pass rushing prospects I've ever seen. Chase Young, defensive end, Ohio State, posting a nation-leading 16.5 sacks, and he missed two full games. Remember when he had an NCAA issue? So, boy, oh boy, Tua still on the board, who some believe might be the best quarterback in the class. Third pick overall, he has the Lions taking Jeff Okuda, the cornerback out of Ohio State. He's a really, really good player. He has the Giants taking Isaiah Simmons, the outside linebacker at Clemson. Then Tua's there on the board at five for the Miami Dolphins. Six, he has the Chargers taking Jordan Love, the quarterback out of Ohio State. And then in that top 10, he still has Jacksonville taking Justin Herbert, the Oregon quarterback, at nine. So what do we have, Chris? Four quarterbacks off the board in the first nine picks. I don't think that's ever happened. I do not believe that has ever happened in the NFL draft. And then you go into the second round at number 43, Chicago. He has them taking Damon Arnett, cornerback, Ohio State. Bears didn't yield much in the passing game last season, but they also didn't do much in forcing turnovers. Plus, free agency cleaned out the secondary a bit. Arnett has smooth hips and some twitch to his game. You believe they're going to take a cornerback that high in the draft?
Well, they need one.
They need some offensive playmakers, kid. That defense is really good.
Okay, sport. Here's the thing. Didn't they just lose Prince Amukamara on the opposite side of Kyle Fuller?
They brought in Trey Roberson.
Yeah, they brought in scrap heap guys. They didn't bring in starters. None of the names that Ryan Pace went out and acquired in free agency this offseason are guys who can step in as starters.
You're talking about.
Yes, yeah. At corner. That's exactly what I'm talking about. And there's clearly a need there for the Bears going forward, because also as you look at the salary cap situation that the Bears are in, Kyle Fuller, a very good player. Kyle Fuller making a lot of money. So how do you improve that position? You have to draft a cornerback probably in this draft. If they draft a cornerback with that first pick that they have in the second round, I would be okay with it because I understand the need.
The I can't believe that they aren't addressing, though, offensive line. Like, they got to get a starter quality guard, a mauler at right guard. They just do. There's a kid in this class who I want to watch tape on, Natain Moody out of Fresno State. He has him going 55 to the Ravens. He is the top-ranked guard in the entire draft class. So how do you balance getting whatever it is, the sixth-ranked corner, seventh-ranked corner versus the number one offensive guard when you have a quality need to get a starter? Like, all of a sudden, if you've got Cody Whitehair at center and James Daniels and this kid or whoever it is at guard, boy, that's a significantly upgraded offensive line in the interior. So, it's an interesting question. 312-332-3776. What about a wide receiver? That's the other thing. He hasn't taken Jalen Reagor, wide receiver TCU. He said they still need a safety, but with no value on the board at 50, it's a good place to bring in another receiver for Nick Foles and or Mitchell Trubisky. Jalen Reagor from TCU has wheels.
Reading the bio on him, it sounds like he's a little bit of a Tariq Cohen-type player. They used him out of the backfield. They used him as special teams. They used him as a wide receiver. He's only 5'11". I'd be lying if I said I watched a lot of Texas Christian football, but yeah, just from reading his bio on NFL.com and the overview they have on him, I'm not super excited. It says he's very explosive. He's very versatile. He can work on all three levels of the field. But why do we need another receiver that's like Tariq Cohen? We need a big play, big body wide receiver?
Well, yeah, Allen Robinson, you have that. And I agree, Danny, you need more of that. But look at what the team is built with. Taylor Gabriel will not be here next year. They need to replace Taylor Gabriel. They need a second wide receiver on the other side of Allen Robinson to give you some production outside of Tariq Cohen. And so I feel like that's where, again, this would address a need, because the Bears do need skilled, talented players on the offensive side of the ball for Nick Foles to find downfield. They absolutely need that. Now, it doesn't address the needs that Cap would like with the offensive guard. I kind of feel like that's something that you can maybe try and find in the fifth round, try and mold someone into that position as skill players become less available later in the draft. But, you know, the one thing that I take from this, guys, is you see the four quarterbacks go in the top 10 picks, top nine picks, that is, with Jacksonville.
I don't think it's ever happened.
And then you get to 49 is where Jacob Eason gets selected, one pick ahead of the Chicago Bears at 50, the Pittsburgh Steelers. So, you know, Eason on the board for the Bears in their first pick in the second round. Is that something you would consider, Cap, looking at a quarterback, either Eason, either Hurts, either Fromm? Seems like from Todd McShay and the way he's projecting this, you will have your pick with that first pick in the second round that you possess.
Yeah, I'm not taking a quarterback. I'm all in with my signings are veterans, Trevathan, Robert. So, I'm not taking a quarterback there.
Well, so that tells me then you are making a 100% guarantee that next season in the first round you're taking a quarterback. Is that the plan here then?
Because
once you get to the fifth round, like, you're not going to find anything.
No, I don't disagree with you. I guess I can't tell you I'm guaranteeing 100%, because if they go
out this... He's got to do something, right?
Well, what if they go out this year and all of a sudden you're like, whoa, Bears went 12-4 and they, you know, made a deep run in the playoffs.
That's great. The point I'm getting to is Nick Foles will not be the quarterback for the Bears 7 years from now.
I'm not saying he will, but I don't think I have to automatically guarantee I'm taking one next spring if Trubisky has a breakout year or Nick Foles leads me to the NFC title game. I don't have a crying, because they obviously played well enough. I don't have a crying need that, oh my God, I have to take it. So, look, Cole Kmet, according to McShay, is on the board when the Bears pick. He goes the next pick. So you're leaving the best-ranked tight end on the board. What if I said to you that J.K. Dobbins was on the board? He has him gone already.
Running back? No. Absolutely not.
I'm not saying I would. I'm just asking the question because he had 2,000 yards and he's an amazing receiver.
I love him. He's really good. I thought that he was a real difference maker for Ohio State last year and why they got so far, him and Justin Fields. And Fields might be the number one prospect next year. There's already some stir with quarterbacks and whether or not Justin Fields over the next year can take over that number one spot from Trevor Lawrence, which I find highly unlikely, but the skill set translates. J.K. Dobbins, Cab, no way would I spend Ryan Pace in the situation he's in where he doesn't have draft picks to waste. He needs to get players who can sustain a starting level for this team for multiple seasons, and we've seen it. Running backs burn out.
Agreed.
And it is not smart to give a running back a second contract in the NFL. We've seen it time and time again. The Cowboys are going to regret giving Ezekiel Elliott the contract they gave him, as the Rams already are regretting, and they cut Todd Gurley this offseason. So no, because it puts you in a spot where then you're kind of wasting this pick, this spot on the team, for 3, 4, 5 years out. You need to get someone, you need to get two players in the second round who can start for your franchise for the next handful of years. Hands down. That's what Ryan Pace has to accomplish here.
That's why I would hope that you get a really good mauling offensive lineman, preferably a guard, unless you feel like Jermaine Ifedi, the kid they just signed out of Seattle. If you feel like he's going to start for you, then get a tackle if there's the right one on the board. Again, get the best freaking player. But I want offensive weapons if possible. Offensive weapons if possible. 312-332-3776. Do the Bears have a Super Bowl caliber defense? Chris Mortensen's going to answer that question for us next.
Ladies and gentlemen,
you're listening to Cap and Company. Follow us on the gram at Cap and Co. and ESPN _ Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
ESPN 1000. Hope you're washing your hands out there. Just ran out. Wash the hands again. Chris said to me, you disinfected the studio. No one's in there with you. I just got in this routine, so I feel like I got to go wash them almost every break.
Hey, man, do you?
That's it. Be you, kid. I was saying that way before Matt Nagy ever rolled into town. Be you. 312-332-3776. So Chris Mortensen, who we love talking football with. Anyway, Mort, I asked him this question yesterday. Do the Bears have a Super Bowl caliber defense?
Listen, I think if you can be in the top 12 of defenses, you have a Super Bowl caliber defense, maybe even top 15. But that is contingent upon the offensive performance. We still forget that this is a tremendous team game, and I'm kind of glad you brought up the defense part of it. But yeah, you know, maybe Floyd was okay with Fangio, or they were on board, but he's had enough time to show. And then the Robert Quinn, listen, one thing he can do is get off the ball and get after the quarterback. He's always been able to do that from the time that Jeff Fisher had drafted him originally there. And you know, so that's what you get with him, and hopefully Chuck Pagano will find a role, and their defense should be outstanding. You know, it's really a matter of everything else working. You know, the offense has got to work, the special teams has got to work, and defense. That's why it's so, you know, we talk about Tom Brady. Yeah, and we talk about quarterbacks. And I'm going to talk about quarterbacks like crazy going into the draft. But for us to forget that this is the greatest team sport is negligent almost to our fans.
So that was Mort yesterday. Danny, do you believe, as a diehard Bears fan, that whenever it is we start football, that this defense is good enough right now as currently constituted? And let's assume that they use their handful of draft picks. Every single one's an offensive player. Do you believe they're good enough defensively to win the Super Bowl?
Oh, yeah. I don't think the defense is a question going into the season. The defense is the weak link. I have a couple questions in the secondary. I mean, you let Clinton Dix go. He wasn't a world beater, but he was a solid safety. And you also lost Prince Amukamara, who did a great job at cornerback. So there's two holes there that need to be filled. Hopefully the Bears can address them, or the two guys that they have on the roster now can fill those shoes adequately. But all the questions are on the offensive side of the ball. The defense last year gave up 18 points a game. That's good enough to make a deep run into the playoffs, if not go to the Super Bowl. Yet the Bears' offense couldn't do their part. So I think this Bears' defense is still Super Bowl caliber. I don't know how long the window is going to be open, but certainly right now it is.
Hey, this hour brought to you by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois. Through life's ups and downs and for all the journeys ahead, you know what to bring. The card you can count on. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Illinois through it all.
Okay, guys, so here we go. I'm going to give you teams last season in the NFL with the fewest points given up. So we're looking at the defenses, and I want you guys to tell me, out of these teams, which teams have a championship-level defense, okay? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give you the list. Number one last season, the New England Patriots. They gave up 14.4 points per game on defense. Are they a championship-level defense?
I got to go back and look. What all did they lose besides Brady? What did they lose on the defensive side of the football? I know they franchise-tagged their star guard, Joe Thuney. What did they lose defensively?
Well, just a quick reaction.
Okay, quick reaction, yes, they do.
Danny? Yes, quick reaction, yes.
Okay, so New England, yes. The Buffalo Bills were second, giving up 16.5 points per game on defense last season.
Quick reaction, yes.
Okay. The Baltimore Ravens were third, 18.2 points per game last season, given up by the defense.
100%. 100 emoji, I'm giving you.
Okay, number four, the Chicago Bears, 18.6 points given up on defense last season.
Yes.
Okay. Pittsburgh Steelers are number five, 18.9 points per game.
I would say first blush, yes.
I'm going to go with that as well.
Okay, Minnesota is six at 19.4 points per game.
Yeah, I'm
going to
say no. They have had some losses. Everson Griffin's a loss. I would say no, that their defense is not good enough.
But wasn't Griffin bad?
He had some issues.
Or is that their safety? Is that who you're talking about? Who's their safety? All right, carry on.
I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say yes. They're still a championship caliber defense.
Okay, number seven, the San Francisco 49ers. Yes. They gave up 19.5 points per game last year.
Yes, they went to the Super Bowl.
Okay. Number eight, the Denver Broncos, giving up 19.8 points per game last season on defense.
Yeah, I just read an article, and Fangio feels like their defense is going to be better, and he's a hell of a coach. Yes.
With Vic Fangio calling the defense, yes, I'm going to go yes.
Okay, the Dallas Cowboys are ninth on the list, giving up 20.1 points per game last season.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, I agree with Danny. Absolutely not. Also, just to go back to what I said about the Vikings, I knew I had read this article. The production loss with the departures of Everson Griffen, Linval Joseph, Trey Waynes, Mackenzie Alexander, Xavier Rhodes,
that's who I was
talking about. Stephen Weatherly, Andrew Sendejo, and Jayron Kearse. They are absolutely looking to rebuild their defense.
Yeah, Mike Zimmer is a hell of a coach, though. So.
He is, and they signed Michael Pierce, so he will be the Linval Joseph replacement. But beyond that, they have not added a lot, and people up there are terrified that their defense is not good.
Okay, number 10 on the list, the Kansas City Chiefs, giving up 20.2 points per game last season on defense.
Doesn't matter how many points they give up, they're going to score more, so I'm going to just say yes, they're a championship caliber
defense. Yeah, I'm not convinced. I'm not sure Terrell Suggs will ever play again. He got old. He said, you know, he wanted to try and win that ring there. I'm not convinced that's a Super Bowl caliber defense, but like Danny said, they're going to put up so many points, they don't have to be.
Okay, so here's the point of the exercise, right? We get to Kansas City, 10th on the list. Not only do they have the offense to make up for the fact that they're not top five, their defense was good enough to win a championship, being 10th in the NFL on defense. So if we look at the other teams in this list, the Patriots, is their offense good enough to match the defense and win a championship? Probably going forward, it's not, right? You guys would agree with that?
Agreed.
Buffalo's offense, probably not good enough. They probably won't take the step to allow that defense to win a championship.
Adding Diggs was a big addition.
Yeah, sure. But then you're assuming that Josh Allen is going to turn into a top 15 quarterback, which, you know, what we saw in the playoff game, he had some spectacular plays and some bonehead plays to go with it.
No
so,
doubt.
I think Josh Allen's the biggest question mark. I think Buffalo really has a good shot to be a really good team if Josh Allen can figure it out.
Yeah, probably the best team in that division if you think the Patriots are going to take a step back now that they don't have Tom Brady. Baltimore, without a doubt, I'm not even going to ask you guys, their offense is good enough to match that defense to win a Super Bowl. I think Baltimore is one of those teams. The Bears, it's a big question mark, right? The Bears are the fourth team defensively on that list. That offense needs to step it up. Pittsburgh, that offense, is that offense good enough to match what they've done defensively? I don't know. The Vikings, I think you could say question marks for both, right? With the Vikings, Cap, you said they're not good enough defensively. Danny, you said they are. Their offense has been the thing that people point to, especially with their quarterback. And the quarterback in big spots has been the question mark, right? Then we get to San Francisco. Their offense is good enough. We know that. And then Denver. Denver's offense, not good enough. That's why Denver has not been a playoff team.
Correct.
They haven't been able to match it. Dallas is the one team in this list before we get to Kansas City at 10 where Dallas, their offense could be good enough to match that. So can the Bears get to where Dallas...
But Dallas losing Robert Quinn on their sack leader, 11.5, and he was number one in the NFL in percentage of plays off the line of scrimmage where he pressured the quarterback, and it wasn't close. He was number one.
Yeah, but how many sacks did he get?
11.5.
Okay. He didn't lead the league in sacks, though.
No, he didn't, but he pressured the quarterback...
No, I'm aware.
34% of the time, and the next closest guy was either Clowney or one other player at 28%.
So the point is, can the Bears be better than the Cowboys, the Broncos, the Steelers, and the Bills? Because we kind of answered the question for the other teams. So Steelers, Vikings, Broncos, Cowboys, and the Bills. Can the Bears be better than that offensively?
Not currently constructed. They have got to add a receiver, another running back to that room. Absolutely. And maybe a better tight end. Now, if you tell me they come out of this draft, if Cole Kmet is truly good enough, they got Cole Kmet, they added somebody to the running back room, and they added another speedy guy at wide receiver, yeah, maybe. And obviously an offensive lineman. 312-332-3776. We catch up with our buddy, always fun to talk with, my old partner Dan Plesac, next.